Okay, we have two readings. Matt is going to generously read them for us. Here you go.
Okay, the first reading tonight is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24, verses 13 through 24. And the second reading is from theologian Paul Tillich's sermon entitled The Right to Hope. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." From Tillich's sermon. Where there is genuine hope, there that for which we hope already has some presence. In some way, the hoped for is at the same time here and not here. It is not yet fulfilled, and it may remain unfulfilled. But here, in the situation and in ourselves, as a power which drives those who hope into the future, there is a beginning here and now. And this beginning drives toward an end. The hope itself, if it is rooted in the reality of something already given, becomes a driving power and makes fulfillment not certain, but possible.
Thanks, Matt, for that very slow and deliberate and articulate reading. So as many of you know, when I grew up in a very conservative household, right? And my parents, they were both immigrants from Korea. They were also Christians. And with that often comes this deep conservative piety that they had. I, for example, was not allowed to watch The Simpsons. How many of us are messed up in the head? I was not allowed to watch Simpsons. And I found this funny because I was watching like RoboCop or something with Neil, and he was like, "Yeah, my dad took me to see RoboCop." I was like, "What the hell?" It was like the most violent movie, and I couldn't watch The Simpsons, but his dad took me to RoboCop. So if you look at how we've developed and who we've become as people, you can sort of see. Anyway, so one of the more notable restrictions that was placed upon me, which is a little bit ironic now given a lot of what I do, is like I couldn't listen to any music I wanted. I had to listen to basically classical music and like Christian praise rock music. But I had this rebellious cousin who was like older and she was cool and she would like sleep over sometimes and then like sneak out to go to raves and stuff. This was like the 90s. And she, for my birthday, I think I was maybe 12, she got me Alanis Morissette's first CD. Yeah. Yes, yes. Because I think I had heard it on the radio in her car and I was like, "Oh, I like this." I had a lot of anger. So she got me this CD and I had to hide it. And I don't know how parents do this, but you know, it was eventually found and my mom confiscated it from me. And there's like, if you've ever seen the album, on the back, there's like a neon snake or something like this, which she surely thought must be like a demonic, satanic sign. She was very upset about that. So I never saw that CD again. And so my whole sort of basically like elementary through high school life was like a lot of Chopin and like DC talk and stuff like that. If you know about that sort of stuff. So, but when I went to college, I discovered the world of peer-to-peer downloading. Right? And I was coming from AOL, so it's like a big deal. This is, I'm 30 now. This is 2002. I know that's like mind-blowing for some of you, but yeah, I was still using AOL at 2002. And I always heard of this band called Radiohead. And having now at my access the ability to download everything I wanted, something's good, something's bad. I downloaded Radiohead, like their entire catalog. I remember distinctly that day, like I downloaded Karma Police, I think was the first song I heard. And like it like just blew my mind so much. That's when I immediately like downloaded all of their albums, right? Because in 2002, they had already come out with like 5 albums at that point. So I downloaded all of them and I spent the next like 6 hours listening to all this music. And like, it sounds cliche and I'm just a little embarrassed to tell the story because, you know, Radiohead is such a cliche in some ways, but it really did sort of transform a lot of things for me. I'm gonna come back to this story in a second, but I wanted to say that today, and not just today, but for the next 3 weeks, we're gonna talk about this concept of hope. And we were thinking about what should we do, what should we talk about in the beginning of the year? You know, resolutions are obviously like the big thing, and Andrew's already talked about that last week. So one thing that's sort of bound up in the idea of a resolution is this hope that we can be something different, right? When we make a resolution to be healthier, to drink more water, to work out and stuff, which, by the way, those are all resolutions of mine this year. We're actually saying that we hope for ourselves to be something better and different, right? It's a way of doing something actively, enacting a hope and making it happen. So next week, we're going to talk about that. Today, I'm going to talk about sort of what hope is, generally speaking. Next week, Carrie is going to talk about hope in community. And then after that, we'll do hope in justice. It's sort of a little three-part thing. For today, I want to focus on three concepts, and I'm going to break it down very explicitly. The first thing I want to talk about is this idea that this is where that little excerpt that Matt read, that Paul Tillich sermon, which was called The Right to Hope, right? I want to talk about what it means to have a right to hope. When we look at the Bible, a very confusing book that has a lot of weird stuff in it, one way to read the Bible is to sort of try to look at it through a lens of this concept, this idea of hope, right? The Bible, in some ways, is this collection of people hoping for a lot of stuff, right? It's a collection of these stories, right? Hope for safety, hope for liberation, hope for redemption, salvation, recognition. People have hope in their nation. They have hope in God. They have hope in family, in friends. And in that book, there is a ton of hope that is not fulfilled, hope that seems disappointing to people. The story I just chose from the gospel, right? This is a story where Jesus has just been crucified. They've laid him in the tomb. And these dudes are walking down the street and they meet Jesus. They don't recognize him because that's another sermon. But anyway, they talk to this guy. And what do they say to him? They say, all this stuff happened. This guy died. He was crucified. We had hoped he would be the one to redeem Israel, right? This like central Christian story, this hope that this person would make a massive difference in the world. And they hadn't seen it at that point. And if the Bible is, in my opinion, I think it is, a sort of good representation of how weird and strange human beings are, right? All these stories in there that have all this weird stuff, I read it and in some ways you're like, oh, that's so bizarre. But like, if I examine myself, I see a lot of that weird stuff in there. You know, hatred of people, wanting to kill people, all that kind of stuff is in there. If it's a good representation, then it also means that like our own lives, right? Our sort of psyche, our spirit, our soul, we're also giving a story of hope as we live, Right? Just as the Bible is a collection of these stories, our own life has this hope interspersed through it. But the weird thing about hope is that it's not always like a strictly positive term. It has this quality where you can easily dismiss it, right? So we talk about something like wishful thinking, or we say like, that's a pipe dream, or I just bought a Mega Millions ticket the other day because the jackpot's like at 223 million. I didn't win, but I was hoping I would, and I probably will buy another one. But you could take that sort of hope and dismiss it very simply, right? It's like, oh, yeah, you have a lot of hopes, whatever. So the question comes out of that, what does it mean to have the right to hope for something? So I'm going to read again what Tillich said in that little sermon of his. And I want you to hear it one more time within the context of what I just said. Where there is genuine hope, there that for which we hope already has some presence. In some way, the hope for is at the same time here and not here. It is not yet fulfilled, and it may remain unfulfilled. But it is here in the situation and in ourselves as a power which drives those who hope into the future. There is a beginning here and now, and this beginning drives towards an end. The hope itself, if it is rooted in the reality of something already given, becomes a driving power and makes fulfillment not certain, but possible. Right? My Mega Millions ticket is not really the sort of hope that Tillich is talking about there. Right? For it hasn't happened, it probably won't, it won't happen, let's be honest, right? But it's not like that hope is a driving force in my life. Right? It's not really, a hope that's genuine is it's like a seed that you have. It has all this stuff in it. It's possible if you watered it and you gave yourself to it that it could grow into something. There's no guarantee, but it's possibly there, right? The right to hope, it demands a genuine type of hope. So that's one thing, okay? So the right to hope is number one. Number two, I want to talk about hope as part of our imagination. And so I think that if you look at hope and you look at this idea of imagination, they're sort of like very close relatives. It's very true that we can imagine all sorts of things. All sorts of things, right? We can imagine all sorts of things. And some of those things, we probably don't want them to happen when our imagination goes in a weird way. But more often, I think, we use our imagination to sort of explore the possibility of what could be, right? To imagine what we could be, right? Imagine what the world could be, right? When we read like a fictional book or watch movies, or when I read, you know, sort of random stuff online, like, you know, on Facebook, I'll see like a post about this high-speed railroad that they want to build across America. And I'm like, oh, that shit looks dope. I really want that to happen. And I imagine riding a railroad all across America, and it's like, that's an imagination that's happening, right? We're imagining what could be fulfilled, and we're hoping that it's gonna happen. The weird and tricky thing about imagination, though, is that it's actually not that easy to imagine anything, right? When we think about imagining stuff, we're like, oh, you could imagine whatever you want. Here's like, it's not very easy, right? It's like, here's like a floating ball of squid ink or something, right? It's like, you could imagine whatever, right? But it's actually not that easy. You know why? Because what we imagine is directly correlated and bound up in what we already know, right? You can't step outside of what you already know to imagine something. So if I said to you, imagine the color, blah, 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 right? There's no... we have no idea what to imagine at that point, right? Because that color is not at all within the purview of our experience. And so, when we are imagining things, it demands both like a creativity, but that creativity is put together with the fortune of having been exposed to something worth imagining, right? Again, in that quote that Tillich said, genuine hope, which is that for which we've already had some presence of. My third part. Hope and its relation to the relationship to the kingdom of God. So what I'm saying here is I'm like sort of tying these first two points together is that important to this idea of genuine hope is the ability to imagine something worth hoping for. And in order to do that, we need to have glimpses of that thing, right? This old Christian term, the kingdom of God, which, you know, frankly, like, I think for some of us, kind of hits our modern ears a little weird, right? Our democratic, loving, sort of anti-despotic ears. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Yes, there we go. But in its most generous sense, if we look at that term, what it's come to mean, or one way to imagine it, is to say the kingdom of God is a state in which, you know, as it says, like poetically in the Bible, where every tear shall be wiped away, right? Where the lion and the lamb will lie together in peace, right? This is sort of the depiction of what it means to have the kingdom of God. That sort of thing is something I personally imagine and hope for. But the thing is that we have to, again, be able to witness, be able to acknowledge, be able to sort of see, recognize when this kingdom of God is sort of strangely breaking into our present reality. Right. I'm going to defer one more time to Tillich here, because he talks about this a little bit in that same sermon. He wrote this, "For the kingdom of God does not come in one dramatic event, sometime in the future. It's coming here and now in every act of love, in every manifestation of truth, in every moment of joy, in every experience of the holy." Right. So he's making this distinction. Like, we think about sometimes like the end times, when it's all going to be good, and like there's going to be like fire and horses and stuff, and like we're going to murder all the bad people, and then everything's going to be fine, right? The kingdom of God isn't really like that. I hope not, at least. The kingdom of God is actually this sort of idea that stuff is actually possible here. And that when we do things to make it happen, you could actually see that in the here and now, right? And when we see that, you know, we're not just passively looking, we're also fighting for it, right? You have to sort of, if you see a little bit of that kingdom, you have to grab it and pull it down into this place, right? Stuff that we're talking about, like going to this MLK rally, being part of justice work, is a part of pulling a little bit of that kingdom into our present reality and seeing enough of it so that we can imagine and keep imagining and hoping for something better. So, the story I told in the beginning about the music, to tie it back into what I'm saying here, right? I have in there, I'm thinking about what it means to have my mind opened up to a new possibility, right? I was gonna say trivially, but music is not trivial, so importantly, with like music, hearing that for the first time, having this whole thing exposed to me, breaks open my imagination into what is actually possible in the realms of art and culture, right? It's our job here, I think, as a community, as a people who are like striving to live better lives and seek truth and figure out what that's all about, is to do this work of like imagining something amazing and putting our efforts into trying to see that as much as possible, such that our hope for it can be genuine. Because we need those moments. We need that Radiohead moment that I had. We need, you know, seeing justice actually happen in the world. We need to see that stuff in order for us to keep going. Okay. It's basically all I wanted to say. What I wanted to do for we do a discussion or something like that is rather than have like a little small groups, because I think it's important that we are able to like hear each other in this a little bit, is for us to vocalize a little bit, whoever wants to publicly hear, something for which we hope or are imagining can be possible for us.